it time to get started. Mr. Scott, are you on this morning?
Yes, good morning.
Okay, good morning to you too as well. Okay, it's 11:45. Call the Roman Municipal Utilities Commission meeting to order on Monday, April 22nd at 11:45. And we'll start off on the agenda. Any changes to the presented agenda? Anyone have any changes? Okay, no changes to the current agenda. We'll move on to the consent agenda. And as provided there, our consent agenda includes minutes from our April 8th meeting and then payment of our bills for this time period. So I would look for the motion to accept a resolution to for approval of our consent agenda.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
A motion to accept the resolution to accept our consent agenda has been made. I open it up for any discussion. Either those minutes are correct, and nothing too much on the bills. Anything from Mr. Hewitt and Ms. Rundy to point out? Okay, hearing none, if you'd take roll call, Bill.
Commissioner Mabul?
Aye.
Weber?
Aye.
DeBleek?
Aye.
Magnuson?
Aye.
McDonald?
Aye.
Lahmer?
Aye.
Mattern?
Aye.
Okay, that's approved, and we are honored to have Representative Dave Baker here today. And we are, Dave, we are honored to have you here. He's going to just do a little legislative update, and it's open to ask questions but regarding to our business. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioners, it's an honor to be here today. For those of you that don't know me or that are watching us, my name is Dave Baker. I'm a state representative here from most of Candiac County and representing District 17B. And as a former Power Commissioner sitting in those chairs, you guys look way better than I ever did sitting in those chairs. Mr. Hamm, we need new chairs here someday, though. They've been well served, I think. I need to put that shout out anyway. Thank you for having me again. We are just wrapping up a nice Easter Passover break that legislators could go home and spend time with their families, kind of get our batteries regenerated again. Actually, from this meeting, I'm going to be going home and packing up and kind of going back. We are on the House floor tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. And we are going to dive into the big omnibus bills that if you thought they were going to get smaller, you're wrong, because they are much bigger than ever on the House floor. And we have a whole bunch of things happening in the House that some things are good, some things I support, and some things I really don't. And as a member of the minority party this year, I find my role playing a little bit more defense and trying to fire off things that I think are going to be problems in our future in Minnesota. And a lot of that actually has to do with my energy background. Sitting on this commission, it really prepared me well to serve, in my mind, communities and co-ops better, because I know what it's like to try to make this work in our local communities. You decide the rates, you decide the investments, and the pressure you're under to look at the next 10, 20, 50 years in our community with a power service is really a big deal. So that really helped prepare me to be on the Energy Committee. And I have spoken a lot on energy around the state and in the metro, but I do a lot of speaking on this in committee meetings, because there are a lot of freshmen on this committee this year that have never thought about where the switch happens behind the switch when you flip your lights on. And I've been able to share a lot of my understanding and what I've learned here. So as we enter this next week, we're going to be passing a lot of bills, trying to add amendments to make the bills better, or maybe not as dangerous, in my opinion, as what the Republicans will be doing now here in the House. So we're going to work hard to work together and getting some good legislation out. We start, I think, tomorrow with our energy and our jobs bill, which is going to be a big omnibus bill. They put two committees into one bigger bill. Again, I get the efficiencies of time. You know, omnibus bills have a tone about them, because you don't hear a lot of individual bills in there, but there literally can't be, you can't hear every single bill on the floor, because there's over 3,000 bills have been entered this year already. And if we get out of our session this year and we pass and actually get signed into law, it may be 300 bills. And each one of those can take some bills are literally a five-minute conversation. You get 100% support. Some of them are hours on hours of debate because of the sensitivity of these issues. So we are jumping in tomorrow morning, first thing. Now we're going to start passing bills, at least off the House floor. The Senate will be doing the same. And then we have to work on these through conference committees. We get the bills that we can all agree to, and then they go to the governor for hopefully some signatures. But we are a very far apart on many issues with spending, regulations, and that'll be a big decision-making process here now in the next 30 days to get our work done in time. So we are supposed to be done by midnight on May 21st. And so it'll be a fast-paced reading of the session. Again, just talking a little bit about energy, I have sat through a lot of committee hearings understanding climate and what's happening with climate. I will tell you that it isn't a joke. We should pay attention to what's happening to our climate. As I've learned about this and researched about changes in our world, I will tell you that Minnesota should be really proud of what we are doing in climate cleanup and our changes that we're doing in Minnesota. Even just recognizing some of the work that the Muni has done here with your recent decisions about, you know, plant and the district heat and where we're buying our power, to see that this energy here is 66% carbon free is a huge, huge thing. And I think that's a congratulations to the board and to our staff here to work hard to make sure that we are leading in that effort. One of my concerns, talking about carbon-free, is a bill that has been introduced and in the House floor that will be in tomorrow's bill, which brings us 100% carbon-free by the year of 2050. I love the idea. I really do. I think carbon-free should be everybody's goal. My concern is that the folks writing this bill and having the hearings with us didn't do a very good job talking about the affordability of what this will do. So as a small business owner myself, and I know a lot of folks sitting around here listening to us are concerned about their power bills, but for people on a fixed income, and if you are in a $25 to $45 per month rate for your energy costs, or maybe that includes some of your water and sewer, what we're seeing, if we take our eye off the ball with affordability, those rates are going to be creeping up to probably $50, $60, $70. And that's what they have seen in the state of California. If you go too far too fast, when the technology isn't ready, and the ideas and the ideals are there, that is great. But when you start mandating companies like this company here to start planning on carbon-free, no matter what, by the age or the date of 2050, you will start to get nervous. You will start to spend money in places that you don't want to because you don't know how we're going to get there, but the technology and the expertise probably doesn't sit here in this community. But somebody will want to sell you something for a lot of money to get you there, and it may not be what we want to have at the end of the day. And everything that you spend always ends up back at the ratepayers. It's how our system works. So I'm just concerned that mandating versus providing encouragements and goals should be our mission as a state government. I think us in the state capitol, it's scary, and I don't think it's very prudent of us to start telling you how to do your jobs, especially if you're a municipal or a co-op. The smallest of our operators of power and energy in our state should not be playing by the same rules as the big investor-owned utilities like Xcel Energy or Minnesota Power or Otter Tail Power. Let them lead the way. Let them find the best ways to do this. And then, by gosh, I know that our communities will want to get right behind them and join them on that win. But it's going to be too costly for a small company like ours with only having 8,000 or 9,000 meters. That's just too much when you've got too much at stake there. So I'm concerned about that. I'm going to continue to talk about the affordability, but I also want to have our goals to be carbon-free as well in the state of Minnesota. One of the other things I wanted to bring up today was my concern about a program started a number of years ago in Minnesota called the Community Solar Gardens, and how they are a program, when we dive into it, is a very expensive program for people that intended on having a place where people that wanted to be part of carbon-free, wanted to be investors into solar energy, have the land necessarily to do it, or they didn't have the capacity here on their rooftop to do it, but they could buy a piece of a solar garden. What we've learned in St. Paul is, in Minnesota, we had a very aggressive program that started, I want to say this is about 8-10 years ago. And in Minnesota, we have alone over 600 megawatts of power being created today by community solar gardens. We are by far and away the leading state in the country with this because our paybacks are very positive for people who want to invest. In fact, we have gotten so popular that the PUC, the Public Utilities Commission, is saying we better have some limits on what we can do here. Are they concerned about that? The legislature actually what sets the limits. Because if we go too far too fast, we're going to be out of balance with our renewables energies going into the grid. And I think what we've learned about solar gardens is the folks making out of this thing are the investors and the solar developers. And what we're finding is when a company like Xcel Energy can go make a big utility grade scale of solar power fields at 3.5 cents a kilowatt, and yet the developers are signing agreements for 12.5 cents, and they sell that to the grid for a much higher price, so that 12.5 cents, when they could have built it for 3.5 cents, the ratepayers that are not part of that solar system are going to pay more for their energy. And they just simply pass it on to their Xcel rate energy payers in this case. So my point is, solar is good. The problem with solar gardens is because solar has gotten so cheap so fast, it's now, this program looks like it's not a good program, but yet in the legislature they want to expand it. In fact, they want to make it not just a megawatt field, they want to do a 3-megawatt field. And this is going to allow big investors, big companies, they can buy up to 40% of a total solar community garden. 40% can be sold to one subscriber. And that subscriber, if you have the money and the investment to do, you're guaranteed to make money. It was intended for residential folks, and I think that this has kind of lost its meaning, in my opinion, that we've learned about this. So we are now watching this very, very closely. The biggest profit makers of this are folks that don't even live in Minnesota. I will tell you that Warren Buffett owns more solar gardens in Minnesota than anybody. And these out-of-state corporations are making a lot of money on the backs of our ratepayers here in Minnesota that are under those programs. Now, that doesn't affect this company here, but if you dive into the details, we have to pay attention to how our rates are established. And so I'm concerned about expanding the solar garden program. So I hope that as I learn this stuff and can pass it on to you, as these decisions come to your table, solar is a good thing. Wind is a good thing. It's getting really cheap. But we have got to have our base load balance, and I think that's the key that we have to have in our state energy program. So I think it's also just wanted to make a comment that to see the energy, the partnership with Missouri River Energy is a good thing. I like to see where you guys are going with this. I know that as we become, we are changing in our world of how we do things, but they are a good company that will help you stabilize things in the long run as well. And just finally, I'm taking a tour here in the next 3-4 weeks from there's a pilot project with storage in Minnesota on how we can build up some batteries and hold renewable energy for a while. We're hearing a lot about the storage is the next big thing in our energy world. And as we have our windy days and our sunny days, we have to try to store that as much as we can, and then when we need it, we can flip the switch and we can generate that power when the wind isn't blowing any longer. Batteries are a really bright future, but we are a long, long way from having utility-scale battery storage available to our grid that can really give us any kind of a return. So we're learning about those big picture items there in St. Paul with those kind of things, and it's been an honor to serve. I love serving on the Energy Committee. I also serve on Health and Human Services, Education. I'm on the Rules and Administration Committee as well, and I just was recently appointed to the Jobs Committee after we had some House members. One went to be a senator, one was reelected, we had some reelections, and so I was reappointed, so I was added a new committee, and that's a Jobs Committee. So with that, Madam Chair and members, I guess I stand for questions. If you have any thoughts, concerns, Go sit down in the corner, Dave. I'll take whatever you need to tell me, but it's an honor to be here again, Madam Chair and members, whatever I can do if there's any questions.
Just one question, and again, this is just from my farm background. With all these solar gardens and those being built all over, is there any concern about the farmland that's out there or the family farms and some of those things going on with the solar farms?
And thank you, Madam Chair. That's a great question. That's a discussion we have a lot. So here is a indicator of how these investors work. They a lot of times will pay you three times what a rental will give you on a crop land. If you get paid $100 an acre for raising crops, developers may pay you $250 or $300 an acre if you'll put solar gardens up, because they can still make that numbers work because they've got that wiggle room of 3.5 cents to 12.5 cents a kilowatt. They're taking all productive land, but they're also paying the farmers really well to do it. Now, if you want to be smart about it, you could try to do it in areas that aren't as productive. I think that's a good thing. I think there's areas that they're looking at even for where livestock is, it provides them shade. There's some good things that you can use with some of those kind of land, but one of the components of the bill that has us nervous is that this is typically not an Xcel Energy territory out here. Now, it is in Spicer, but it's not in Wilmer, of course. But they want to take where they will allow solar gardens to happen now in other areas that are not an Xcel Energy area, but they'll tap it onto the line. For example, we have one in Atwater, where they can get onto the Xcel grid and tap it in there. But the land out here is so much cheaper than it would be, say, in the metro area or the suburbs. So they're trying to get it further away. They're trying to get it away from the contiguous counties where this land or this power will be purchased. They want to find the cheapest land they can and still get all the benefits and still charge the highest price if they can. So land is something that we don't make any more of. And so we have to make sure that the space that solar requires is one of the biggest challenges that it has. You can put up a whole lot of wind turbines and do pretty well with that, but solar doesn't have that ability. So farmland is going to be a precious item, and yet the developers are finding ways to give farmers a very good return, and I think it's going to end up being paid for by other ratepayers.
Yeah, and it gets to be a little short-sighted ultimately.
We've got to feed everybody, too.
My perspective again.
Yeah, we do.
Others have questions for Representative Baker. Go ahead, Commissioner.
Representative Baker, thank you for being here.
Commissioner.
Appreciate your update and what's going on there. You know, I do share your concerns with some of the mandates that are being proposed and looking to be pushed out at the state level. I think the nuances and the complexities of some of the shift that's being looked at are extremely, or could be, very extremely costly. And so I do share those concerns. I think we need to navigate those waters carefully and make sure that we maintain a healthy balance there. That being said, looking at what's going on with energy and all the other issues, actually, that's taking place at the legislative level, I'm curious how energy kind of ranks right now amongst all the rest of the issues that you guys are currently dealing with.
That's a great question. I would say that they're all important. Energy doesn't carry a lot of dollars and cents when it comes to spending money. I think our total budget for the Energy Committee is about $25 million, which is pretty small when we're looking at a $46 billion overall state budget. You can get by in the state of Minnesota without having an energy bill pass or without having something signed. It just means things go on as they are. It means that some of the mandates don't take place. It certainly doesn't. I want to see an energy bill pass. We've got things in there for the energy bill that I think is important to our friends at the biomass plant in Benson. After that closed down, we've got components there that we need to have something pass on this. And I'm working with the senators that have heard this bill. I had a hearing on this as well in our hearing, but the funding wasn't the way I wanted it. But the Senate version is much better, and so I'm working with the senators to try to get it kind of an end around to get that support out here that we need for our folks. So I think we just need to make sure that energy is not like health and human services. It's not like transportation, not like education. We have to get those so that we can pay our teachers and we can pay our folks to take care of the roads. If there's a state shutdown, that's a problem. Energy, certainly, again, I don't see any of that happening, but you can survive without kind of having that energy side of things, getting all kind of muddled up in the details. But we'll find something. We want to get this done. We want to balance balance the budget. And but I hope that a lot of these mandate ideas are going to turn into more of words and bills that say may instead of the word must. And in St. Paul, those make a huge difference when you are looking at a bill. For folks like John to have to roll out new programs, it's that when you can or if you can, it's not you must and you will. Those make people nervous. So that is our focus on that. So every item is a priority for us, but energy is in the bigger scheme of things is more of a smaller item. Because people, a lot of people don't understand it, but it's there and it takes time to plan, and so we'll do everything we can to keep it at a minimal impact on the ratepayers.
Do you have any way of gauging right now the likelihood of some of those mandates being softened a little bit or some wording adjustments taking place?
Well, thank you. I would say that right now, I know Governor Walz is a very big supporter of this 100% carbon free by 2050. I have shared my thoughts directly with the governor and my concerns as a former commissioner in this utility company. I think the Senate has a lot of strength right now to sort of bring in some balance to this. And I don't think the Senate's going to allow certain things to go through with those strong mandates today. But having this conversation, though, today, in a couple of years, we likely will be doing more and more. So it starts with these conversations. It starts with us getting an understanding of what this might mean from a ratepayer standpoint. But again, when I compare ourselves to California and the rates they pay there compared to what we're paying in Minnesota, that should be more of a conversation we have to share with ratepayers. Balance is important. We want carbon free. We should keep looking towards more renewables, but we can't live on renewables. We just can't. The people that want to remove fossil fuel totally, I think it's not reasonable, at least in the next 30 years or 40 years. I don't see that yet. A lot of people may not agree with that, and I understand that, but we have to have balance in government.
Absolutely. Thank you for your update, and again, for your work on all of this. We greatly appreciate that.
Sure.
So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Baker, for the update as well. The Commission last week also asked if you could touch a little bit on financing tax exemption bonds. You and I spoke a little bit. If you'd give a state's out on that.
You know, it's a good question, and it's fuzzy yet. I don't think that the state is doing a lot of the tax bonding exemptions that they used to do. Actually, John, I need to probably follow up on that, get some more answers. I was in the middle of getting some responses, and then the break came, and I don't think it's clear, because I know there's some federal state tax bonds, there's some state, and we just need to make sure that what the needs are of what you're looking for, I want to get a clear answer. So I'm going to have to follow up with you on that, John.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Others. Go ahead, Commissioner.
Thanks, Dave, for coming on and giving the update.
And that.
But I have a question on broadband as far as what's happening with broadband. I know Canyon County is kind of an island in itself without services in a lot of portion of the county. And I know it don't affect the utilities here, say, but you know, broadband is something that should be readily available to every household. So
let's see.
And I know there's been bills in the past for funding and the like that haven't seemed to really go anywhere.
Yeah, I would say that's a great question. And I forgot to bring up the broadband update. There are a number of bills coming through. I think that the House, and I was a co-author of this, agreeing to bring in $70 million to rural broadband over the next 2 years. So 35 this year, 35 million next year. It's going to also include some wireless projects, not just always hardwiring everything to every premise, because that's where things get really expensive. We're seeing a bit of an overlay a little bit with some state money that's coming in. We have a lot of federal dollars coming in with the CAF $2. And we are seeing good investments in Minnesota for expanding this. What you don't see on the maps in Canyon Lake County is a lot of our county has been reached out to with folks that are serving wireless customers. Now, wireless has kind of a double-edged thing there. It's not always maybe as predictable or as secure as an in-ground line, but it has helped a lot of people in Canyon County, especially southern Canyon County, where we don't have as many trees. So that is a big part of what's helping our area, but I know the local county task force is working with maybe another plan. I am supportive of getting more dollars into the state broadband fund to do more granting, and I hope that our county will be ready to put an application for that. I did meet with TDS, for example, up in northern Canyon County. They have expanded a lot of nodes in there so that they're getting better service to people closer to their service stations, and that is helping quite a bit. We still have areas around Diamond Lake that have virtually no service. There are definite pockets here that we need to work on. There isn't a lot of policy change this year, which is okay. Let's get the money in the bank. Let's get it funded so that communities like ours will apply for these loans or these grants, and then we'll find a partner to come in and do this with us. And I would hope that in a couple of years, if I'm still your representative standing here, we'd like to be able to say we've made a big indent in that project. But it's going to take some more investment on Minnesota's part. But I hope there's going to be a day soon. We can say we've got to it. We got to where we can. I'm not sure that we can get to every single spot in the entire state of Minnesota when you are 30 miles up in the woods. That's going to be different. But I definitely know that this is a part of our economy. It helps grow jobs in rural Minnesota. So I will continue to support broadband every chance I can, if it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks again for showing up, Representative Baker.
You bet, Ross.
I do a quick question. You talked about mandates, and the state's having mandates, the Fed wants to mandate. Are they communicating? Are they on the same page?
As far as any certain issue like broadband, or are you thinking more?
Power.
Power. The mandates from the federal side have gotten a lot better since the current administration has kind of re-looked at the EPA rulings and the energy commissions, and it has gotten better. I've heard they kind of took the throttle off a little bit to states like Minnesota that were moving very quickly to a different model that I think has now been kind of brought back. They are communicating better. I think that what's nice in Minnesota is that we can control a lot of our own state mandates more than the federals are telling us what to do, because Minnesota has always been one of those states that ranks just a little bit above the federals. Oh, we can do this better. We are smarter than the federal folks, which is fine, and we have a lot of waters to protect, and we have a lot of clean air that we care about. The problem with that, again, is we've got to balance that weight to the climate and all those things that kind of come in that whole basket. So I don't think that I think for the most part we're getting along really well with the federal agents and federal authorities right now. It's better than it has been. And I think Minnesota just has to be careful not to go too far above those federal standards. We are seeing the state general kilowatt cost. We used to be, 10 years ago, we used to be in the lower one-third of the country when it came to big companies coming to the state. Now we're just over 50%. So we are losing our economic advantage for power with the country when people are thinking of relocating in Minnesota. So we have to balance that out with our federal folks. But I think it's been working out pretty well, Ross. Thank you. Isaac.
Thank you very much for the work that you're doing for us at the state level. We really appreciate it, and we always commend you the good work you're doing for all of us. Just quick question. This is something that I think I was involved about a couple of years ago. In terms of the utility poles, do we still have those? Because my understanding was we have more of the telephone companies who was very much interested into passing some sort of legislation in that regard. Is there anything in the works?
I think, Zach, you're talking about the small cell for the 5G.
Yes.
That's a good question. That was a hot and heavy item a couple of years ago, maybe even at the end of last year. We tried to get some policy changed, and I think what happened was we passed the law, eventually kind of agreed to by the League of Minnesota Cities and Greater Minnesota Associations of all the communities, so that as these large companies, AT&T and Verizon, want to invest in these really high-speed 5G networks, they need places to put these appliances up there on the poles. And I know it's caused some heartburn with our folks with poles and where do we put them, and we don't want to put them on decorative light poles either. So I think, and I haven't actually followed up on this for a little bit, and maybe John could give us an update, but I believe that there was a state policy passed that gave some guardrails to what a city could charge, and not over the top. I think some communities at the beginning, before this went into place, were charging an enormous amount of money. for those kind of things, and it was almost over-the-top greedy. Mm-hmm. I think we're trying to come up with something so that we, as a state, could try to say to our small cities and our even regional cities that this is an important technology we need to deploy in rural Minnesota. Our communities need to work with these folks that are making these big investments, but you can do it, and hopefully the rate of return for the communities are going to be fair. But I don't know, John, if you have an update on that, but I hope I was didn't go down the wrong rabbit hole on that one.
No, Representative Baker, from a state perspective, that's absolutely correct. However, this issue has escalated to the federal level, to the FCC. The Verizons and ATTs that Dave referenced there basically took this, and they want to exempt themselves from the state rules and regulations through the FCC process. So that's where it's at. It's at the state level being vetted out as we speak, basically. Or at the federal level, thank you. At the federal level being vetted out.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, Zach. That's why I haven't heard about it for a little while, so thank you.
Anything else? Representative. Again, thank you, Representative Baker, otherwise known as Dave.
Yes, thank you very much.
So you're coming today, and please stay in touch with us.
I will.
Any questions, and we will do the same to you.
Thank you.
Safe travels back down there. Shape them up, would you?
Oh, sure.
Okay. All right. Thanks again. Okay, then let's go on to a report from Commissioner Weber on the Labor Committee meeting that was March 11 and April 9, I guess. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, the Labor Committee met, as you said, on Monday, March 11th and April 9th. So I'm presenting 2 minutes, I guess. The first item that we talked about was to establish chair and vice chair positions. Commissioner Weber was nominated for chair, and Commissioner Mabu as vice chair. And that motion passed, so I will continue as chair. We moved on to talking about the newly formatted strategic plan. A lot of discussion went into this. We talked about 6 areas, specifically for strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, with the areas being our buildings, financial, generation of gas and diesel, generation of renewable, our substations and transmission, and our water treatment plant. A lot of discussion went on. We decided to table the discussion as it was getting rather lengthy, and we had other business to attend to, so I will continue that in the April 9th minutes. So we went on to talk about a staffing update. This was some information only of what was going on with staff within the utilities. We went on to talk about the reimbursement of the legal costs with litigation that concerned a former employee, and the decision was not to pursue reimbursement costs for this case. So the meeting was adjourned, and another date was set to talk about and finish the strategic plan, which was on April 9th at 12 p.m. We reconvened, and we finished the discussion after staff had looked at some other things in between the two meetings, and we came to a conclusion of the strategic analysis and decided to present the strategic plan in a work session following this meeting. There was also some miscellaneous staffing discussion that was for information only, and then we adjourned first meeting at 2:19 p.m. and we adjourned the second meeting at 1:20 p.m. on the 9th. So as I said, the strategic plan will be presented and discussed after this meeting in a work session. So I submit for approval and motion the 2 minutes for Labor Committee.
Thank you, Commissioner Weber. Is there a second?
Yep, second.
Okay, the motion's been made, and a second to accept the Labor Committee meeting minutes. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same. Okay, that motion carries. Thank you, and we will discuss a little bit further in our work session. Appreciate that. Financial reports, we'll let our Director of Finance, Ms. Runge, address those, please.
Thank you. We'll start with the electric division first. In the yellow on the top, $8.2 million compared to $7.5 million at this time last year, so we're about $760,000 ahead of last year. In the orange, the expenses, $5.5 million versus $6.2 last year. We are down on expenses about $664,000, the majority of that in our power supply costs. Net margins down in the green, last year $2.3 million, compared to last year at $778,000, so we are just a little over $1.5 million ahead of last year at this point in the year. Moving on to the water division, in the yellow on the top, the revenue, $670,000 to $558,000, about $112,000 ahead of last year. In the orange on the expenses, $490,000 compared to $470,000 last year. We're about $20,000 ahead on our expenses over last year. In the green, net margins, $195,000 compared to $95,000 last year, so about $100,000 ahead of last year at this point in the year. Moving on to the heating division, revenue in the yellow, $296,000 compared to $400,000 last year, so a decrease of $100,000. In the orange on expenses, $122,000 compared to $139,000, we're about $16,000 below last year. Net margins, $185,000 this year compared to $265,000 last year, with $80,000 below last year in the margins. All divisions in the yellow, total revenue $9.2 million compared to $8.4. We're about $769,000 ahead of last year at this point in the year. Expenses in the orange, $6.1 million compared to $6.8, about $660,000 less on expenses this year. Again, most of that is in the power supply. In the green, net margins $2.6 million to $1.1 million, or $1.5 million ahead of last year at this point in the year. Are there any questions on the financials?
Questions from anyone? So far going in the right direction.
Yes. Moving on, the last report is the investment portfolio. A summary of the investments year to date. Our year to date yield 0.78 compared to the BARCAP Government Credit Board 1.58, and you'll notice that's a significant increase over last month. Last month was 0.36, and that jumped up to 1.58. I did contact the bankers on that and asked for the reason for the jump, and there's some significant changes in the markets that affected that. And our index, or the index actually consists mainly of Treasury securities, and we have a lot of CDs in our portfolio. About half of it is CDs, brokered CDs, which don't fluctuate. Again, and the second reason, all bond sectors saw a strong reversal from a big sell-off at the end of the year that has now caught up. So we would anticipate that's going to smooth out over the course of the year. Any questions on the investments?
Thank you, Ms. Runge, for the report. Then we'll let you continue on for discussing our liability coverage, please.
Correct. This is a piece of our annual insurance policy renewal, and we just need some commission approval to not waive statutory limits.
Questions on that? I would look for a resolution to approve that.
I'll offer that resolution.
Second.
Okay, a resolution has been made and second to approve it. Any questions on that? Okay, hearing none, a roll call, please.
Certainly. Commissioner Weber?
Aye.
DeBleek?
Aye.
Magnuson?
Aye.
McDonald?
Aye.
Lahmer?
Aye.
Mattern?
Aye.
Mabou?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, then a little happy news here. The next thing on our list is our scholarship award winner. So it's here and it goes on, and we'll let Michelle, Carried away the Energy and Services Marketing Rep, Ms. Marotsky. Man, I get my tongue tangled up today here. Talk about that, and then we'll let you just go right on to the next one as well, too. Please.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, the first, if you haven't heard it, it's Marotsky, but don't worry, I won't ask you to spell it either. So the first topic is our scholarship award winner. We have Kylie Halverson. She is the recipient of $750, daughter of Rhonda Addison here in Wilmer, and her essay was submitted to MMUA for further consideration of additional scholarship money, and we will have a presentation, will be part of the presentation at the high school on May 24th. Any questions about that?
It was a good essay.
Yes, she captured some good things about public power, the value of it, and specifically Wilmer Municipal Utilities.
How usually this process happens? Is this something that, you know, initiated by the utility asking to write essays?
Yes.
Students?
December, January, we reached out this year to Wilmer High School, the ALC, and Community Christian, and they are all given the opportunity. Their graduating seniors can write an essay based on the topic that MMUA chooses, usually about the value of public power. Then they just submit that, and we review the essays and choose them. Choose the best one or ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. So then I will just go into the video that we have. Missouri River Energy put together this 1-minute video. The full video is on our website, and it touches on affordability, accountability, reliability, and renewability. They also broke it off into 4 25-second spots, one for each topic, and those were put on our Facebook page. So we'll just have Mike go ahead and play that for a minute.
Public power utility. You have our word that we serve in your best interest. But there are a few more words you should know. Affordable. Because we are publicly owned, we are able to keep rates low for our customers. Reliable. Because we employ a local workforce, we are able to keep the lights on and the water running. And we act quickly when a problem does occur. Accountable. Yes, we answer to you. Because we're community owned, you are able to have a voice in the utility's decisions. Renewable. Our customers demand it. So we continue to find new ways to be able to deliver increasingly clean energy. These are just a few words that describe your public power utility. The words mean nothing without action. That's why you'll see us out and about, involved in our community, and working to make it better. Empowering our community. That's what we do. Call us or visit our website to learn more.
Just a fun video.
Yep.
So, any questions about that? Okay. Would you like me just to go right into the next one? Okay.
Please.
So then, again, another benefit of Missouri River Energy Services is that they created that video. They just created our power supply mix. As Representative Baker mentioned, we are 66% carbon free and 34% renewable.
And maybe you can give us a little bit more in detail, Jen, about on this mix, how we have arrived at those different percentages there.
Sure. As stated here today a couple times, renewables of interest to the community, to us as individuals, and we all want to protect our environment to the best that we can. And over time, we continue to move down that path. And as Representative Baker alluded to, we don't want to move down that path too fast because it gets very expensive, but we got to continue to move down that path. And there's mandates at the state level that are being considered to try and push us down that path quicker than what technology allows us to move down that path, which in turn drives up rates, as Representative Baker alluded to. So as we look at our power supply mix, as people in this community, you know, consider whether they want to personally invest in renewables. You know, I guess I would encourage them to take a look at what a renewable mix is, because as you look at what makes up our energy that we supply to our customers, it's very respectable. When you're looking at 66% carbon-free, 33% renewable, and when you look at the mix, we have 13% hydro is where that comes from, with another 15% in wind, and nuclear, 31%. That's a very respectable mix. So as people, you know, if they want to build solar, you know, we never want to discourage that, but if they're looking for affordable energy, WOMA Utilities, along with Missouri River, continues to look at and work towards cleaner energy resources, which in turn is then the energy that our customers receive from us. So as we go forward, those numbers as far as carbon-free and renewable will continue to grow.
Comments from anyone? Would you just reiterate from a little bit those percentages and where our supply all comes from, again, for the general public's knowledge of where those,
sure,
how we arrive at those numbers?
Our power supply, probably the largest proportion of it comes from GRE, followed up by WPPI, as we refer to it, which is Wisconsin Public Power. That's our nuclear piece in there. And then we have our western area, which is our hydro. A large percentage of our hydro is from there. And the MISO market is a large chunk of our power also. And then up to, you know, the last year here, a small piece of it was coming out of our own plant as well, power plant here. So that's the mix of our power supply. Starting then June 1st of this year, the energy that's coming off the MISO market will then be coming from Missouri River Energy Services. So they'll be supplying that part of it starting on June 1st of this year.
When you talk about the WAPI, the western area, that's one of the things, you know, that we are constantly on, per se, on edge a little bit on the federal level, where they're wanting to sell those off to pursue private investors, and that does make up a good portion of our renewables. So to keep those within the portfolios of the western area, which consists of all the users there that are paying that amount back to the federal government as well as the federal for providing that and keeping it up to all the utilities.
Yeah. Madam Chair, that's correctly stated. Our hydro, a large share of that is managed by the federal government. The Corps and the Bureau manages that. However, with that said, as we transition over to Missouri River, Missouri River is in a process of completing a 50-some megawatt, 54, I believe it, megawatt of hydropower that will be coming online here probably within this upcoming year for additional hydro resources in their portfolio as well. So our resources in energy and and carbon-free and renewable will continue to climb. So
I just think, again, statewide, those are numbers. Do we have any, at this point, and this is just off the cuff to ask you that question, because I can't remember how we measure up against a state percentage of renewable power and carbon-free.
The state has a mandate by 2025, all power sectors have to be at 25% renewable. So as a whole, I do not know that answer, Commissioner Lemire, but on average, we are probably ahead of the majority of the utilities, because they have until 2025 to get to 25% renewables.
So we're already ahead of that.
Yes and no. There's another piece to that. When you look at the renewables that we have here, the state, being that our federal system was in place prior to the state adopting the mandate for renewable energy, The state does not look at our hydro, our WAPA hydro system as renewable that can be counted in those numbers.
That's right when you say that.
Yeah.
One question, okay, anybody else? Making a comment?
Good question.
Sure.
Michelle, this particular slide we're looking at, is this available on our website and social media and so forth?
Yes, it absolutely is on our website. It is, I'm going to work on getting it bigger, but it is on the website under, I think it's like save and like saving energy,
okay,
in that section of it. And then I will put it on our Facebook page this afternoon. John and I talked about this morning. We just wanted you to see it first.
Yeah, I think that'd be great. I think the public would probably be surprised to see how much progress we have made. So it'd be good.
You bet.
And of course,
a quick question. John, if I understand correctly, you said hydro is not recognized by the state being as renewable. Is that correct?
The Western Area Power Administration hydro is not. All other hydro is. So that piece of it is not recognized by the state when we have to certify the amount of renewables that we have. It's the Western, because that was already built and producing power prior to the state's mandate of 25% renewables by 2025.
It was a hurdle.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so they disqualified it on us.
Yeah. Even though it's still a good investment going out there, it's, you know, unfortunate, but it is as it is. And then, again, I left with each of the commissioners a little handout showing this so that you can keep it close by. And people ask questions about, well, why aren't you doing solar? What are you doing about renewable? You would have this available for discussion with anyone.
I think, Madam Chair, to expand on that a little bit, it was Commissioner Lemire's idea to have Beth do this here before the meeting, but this is an important talking piece. You know, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, people call, and we have a number of applicants that have come in again this spring, and they say, we want to be more green, we want to put solar on our house, or we want to build solar. And once we start talking about our mix here, a lot of people, we didn't know that, we weren't aware of that, and that actually, they take a step back and rethink whether they actually want to move forward, because it is very expensive to move forward with solar on, you know, on an individual basis, because it's the scale of the solar project so small. So a lot of people, when they find out what our mix is, they rethink whether they want to build solar themselves or just wait for the utility here to continue to build all it. So it's an important piece. Don't shy away from the discussion if somebody talks about what's our mix like, especially if you're talking about doing your own solar. So.
Other comments? Thank you, Michelle, for your update on all those areas today. Okay, then we'll go on and we'll let our general manager, Mr. Hamm, update us on some things.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair. As Commissioner Weber alluded to, we got a work session on our strategic plan following this meeting, and then we have a couple of additional meetings coming up, one to talk about our water treatment plant and generation study analysis, and tomorrow we also will be meeting with the committee, labor committee, to talk about our rate and rate study and moving forward with that. So that meeting's coming tomorrow, and you'll be seeing an order shortly here on our generation study analysis. At staff level, I believe we have one more meeting set up for tomorrow, and then you'll probably be seeing an email for a calendar invite for that meeting as well. Then as we move on, we have retirements. Nancy Logan, if any of the commissioners can make the meeting, the retirement party here this week, Friday, April 26th at 2:30 to 4, it'd be appreciated. And then the webinars we have listed upcoming, I believe Commissioner Lemire and Commissioner Mattern have been taking those in. And our annual meeting in May 8th, so far the only commissioner that signed up is Commissioner Lemire. And then we got the 101 May 13th coming up, and then we got our conventions open house on Thursday, April 15th, MMUA summer conference, and then our legal seminar, staying current emerging issues for the utility, on October 4th. So I would conclude general manager's report unless there is additional questions for me.
Okay, and I bring up any questions from the commissioners. regarding this. We just keep pushing on. Mark these down, any of them that you can attend. I know that you do a lot with the committees that we have and our meetings, but if you can go to them, please try to attend them. Any other comments, questions, concerns? Hearing none, I adjourn this meeting of the Women Municipal Utilities.